Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. It's Chef Tom Douglas.
And Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
We are so happy to be back with our live audience here at the Hot Stove Society. Thank you all for coming. A nice bright group this morning, all hungry for their breakfast sandwiches. I am chef owner of several of Seattle's fine restaurants. We are above one right now, Lola, certainly the Palace Kitchen and Carlisle Room over there by the Paramount Theater. I don't know if you saw last Friday or not, but we got a nice review in the Seattle Times at Cuoco, our Italian restaurant in South Lake Union.
Oh, good for you.
For our all-you-can-eat spaghetti and meatballs on Monday nights at Cuoco.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that. Actually, I did see that. I didn't realize that was a review. That's cool.
Well, I saw it with something else.
Mentioned. I'm not sure what you...
It was mentioned with something else, yeah.
Yeah, they called them the best spaghetti and meatball deal in Seattle.
Yeah.
Anyway, needless to say, we got crushed. And it was a good crush because that's nice over there in South Lake Union.
Yeah, no kidding.
Action, yeah. At dinner time. So we got crushed. We sold 200 orders of all-you-can-eat spaghetti and meatballs, and we replenished 200 orders. So we had 400 bowls of spaghetti and meatballs go out.
Wow.
That's a lot of spaghetti and meatballs. We had to close the restaurant. We ran out.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's awesome
super,
story.
Super
I love
fun,
it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what you should do next is open a restaurant with spaghetti and meatballs.
That's all. That's it. All you can eat. Yeah.
One item.
And I think it's $15, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me, but I think it was $15. So it's not a bad deal.
That's a great deal.
Yeah.
In today's life in South Lake Union, the richest part of the world. Are you kidding? $15 is cheap.
It's cheap. Anyway, and you, sir?
And I am Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat, owner of Luc in Madison Valley. And Lule, downtown Seattle, at the corner of 6th and Union, at the bottom of the Sheraton Grand.
Nice. We have a big show today. Brittany Bartolomeo is going to join us in the Baker's Corner. We're going to talk about baking with fresh corn. Not just cornmeal,
nice,
but fresh corn. Our friends from the Auction of Washington Wines are in the studio to give us a lowdown on the big auction coming up next month. I'm actually cooking at this one for the first time.
Ah, you are.
In many, many, many years. So yeah, it's the first time I'm going to be doing a salmon station and a beef station, I want to say.
Nice.
Out in the park. So, outdoors.
What a great
cooking,
event.
Cooking, grilling, outdoors.
Very successful event.
That reminds me, I'll be cooking at Obliteride. If you want to come out and support the Fred Hutch Cancer Research Obliteride bike run, or bike/run, you can ride for a long time or you can ride for a short time. Anything to help, you know, raise awareness.
I'm just exhausted. Not that the Tour de France is over. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm not riding anymore for
cancer
next few
cancer research.
Months.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I'll be out there. I want to say it's August 9th. If you want to come say hi, I'll be on the salmon grills out there and doing some good work for Fred Hutch and the Obliteride. Our friend Stuart Sloan puts that on every year. It's awesome that what he does. Do you have too much zucchini, Chef?
I think everyone has too much zucchini because zucchini is one of those plants you put in the ground and then suddenly you're like loving the fact that it expands through your backyard in the early summer and you're like, oh, this is so cool. And then the zucchini come out.
Yeah.
All those beautiful flowers. Oh, isn't that cute? And then the monster comes behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, having one zucchini is probably a little too much. My wife loves them. My wife loves them.
Try a half.
I know, exactly. The only thing that I have too much more of than zucchini is summer squash. You know, like the yellow crookneck squash.
Yeah.
It's
just
not my thing.
No.
I don't know what it is, but...
Have you ever tried stuffing them?
I think part of what it is that when they are cooked, they don't look very good unless you grill them or something
right.
like that. Yeah.
See, that's what I do with zucchini. I don't do anything else but grilling them. I cut them in half, I marinate them, and then I grill them.
And then they taste like the grill, which is good.
Exactly. Yeah, give it a little char and, you know, put a little personality on top of that tasteless.
You and I are going to make a dinner party, a summertime dinner party today.
Not with zucchini, I hope.
Well, that's up to you, but the only catch is we have no heat source.
Oh, that's fun. I'm
so
liking that.
I'm bringing a magnifying glass and hoping the sun is out.
I'm going to bring my cold chicken.
Can we use solar power?
No.
You
nope,
can't use solar power
nope,
either?
Nope.
You're mean.
Making the rules.
What about on the engine of the car that we drive to the picnic site?
Yeah, okay. You can use that.
Okay, good.
She actually said no heat, which was, I think, the key word there. No heat.
All right. Let's jump into ordinary to extraordinary. And, Chef, I'm going to ask you this question.
Okay.
How do you make a normal, ordinary breakfast burrito extraordinary? And I have to preface with this is that you've never had a breakfast burrito.
I've never had one. How do you make it better? You start by having one first. That's how I would make it better. I've never had one.
It's always,
I actually didn't know people eat burritos for breakfast until a few minutes ago. We had this conversation. I was
it's
like,
always charming that when you ask Terry a question about a food item that he just looks at you, what is that? Never. Not only never heard of it, but had never had it.
You know what's funny is because I'm actually curious in food in terms of trying things.
Mm-hmm.
But there are something, for some reason, it just does not enter my head. For mm-hmm. some reason, I'm like, I know I've seen burritos on menus everywhere. I have had burritos for dinner, but I've never had burritos for breakfast. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know people ate burritos for breakfast.
So I'm just saying the only way to make them better is to make sure you steam your tortilla well. You don't want it to taste kind of cold and raw. Not raw. They've been cooked, but steam them up really nicely before you use them. And then add a lot of salsa because that tortilla is dry.
That's kind of why I'm not thinking about it for breakfast, because that's not a way to start the day.
Okay, I'm going
to
give you one you really know. Now, we all know an ordinary kind of bowl of steamed clams is white wine, thyme, shallot, butter, right? Give me an extraordinary version.
Oh, I'm going to use merguez.
Extraordinary.
I'm going to use merguez. I love merguez. You know, a nice little spicy sausage.
That's a lamb sausage, right?
Yeah, lamb sausage. And then put some onions, garlic, you know, just the basics, really nicely sweated. Put the sausage in there. Toss it as well in there. Put your clam last minute in there. Let it sweat out. And then finish the whole thing with just a nice amount of olive oil. And then you have this wonderful Mediterranean clam on your hand.
So am I understanding that you not brown the sausage first?
No.
I don't brown the sausage.
Well, the sausage is already, it's already cooked. It's a cooked already.
I always see merguez come raw, and then I cook
it myself. No, I cook my merguez first.
Okay, yeah, but you brown it.
Yes. Then I slice it and then put it at the last minute into mm-hmm. the sauce after the onions and garlic have been sweated. Yes, my mistake. I didn't say I cooked it first, but yes, obviously you have to cook it, because otherwise it's going to be a mess. You could also
boil it in the liquid. That's
what
I'm
saying.
Well,
you could actually cut it in half, take all the meat out, and crumble it into, yes. mm-hmm. like they do in Spain, they do a lot of that. And then they also finish it with a lot of breadcrumbs.
Saffron.
And not necessarily saffron with merguez, but that's how I would make my clam.
Sounds delicious. Yeah. All right, up next, questions from you, our faithful listeners on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Ooh. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. And Tina No is going to join us. She's our executive producer here from LARJ Media.
Yep.
Who produces our show. If you ever want to do your own podcast, just call Tina. She's pretty darn good at it.
Largemedia.com.
Largemedia.com.
Thank you for that shout out. I really appreciate it. All right, you guys, we're going to jump into questions from listeners. Our social media is very active. People are chatting away over there. If you have a question for our chefs, head to Facebook Seattle Kitchen and holler out there, and we'll answer it on the radio. Anybody here have a question for the chefs? Come on over.
All right, come on up to a microphone.
Okay, so your first question on our social media comes from Pam Corwin. She asks, I would love to know whether or not to refrigerate tomatoes and why.
Well, I think Chef and I have a couple of different thoughts on this. You want me to go first?
I say no.
Boom,
You don't have to.
You don't need to.
You should not. Just put them in a bowl. Put a towel over it. Don't get the fruit fly to get to it. And that's the end of the story. And leave them on the counter.
So,
well, they continue to ripen, right, on the counter?
They continue to ripen.
Let's say you're getting to that soupy stage where, like, okay, these don't even have one more day.
Time to make a little tomato sauce.
I get it, but then you put them in the fridge,
right?
And then until you're ready to make tomato sauce, you don't just let them rot on your counter.
No, obviously not. And we do have refrigeration.
Or freeze them.
I'm not against using the beautiful thing called refrigeration, but once you refrigerate, it's a different animal. You know, it's just...
I read something that says you should use... Your vegetables should be just like they are in the grocery store. So if they're out in the open like that, you don't have to refrigerate them. But if they're in the refrigerator mm-hmm. area, is that true?
And if you buy them at the farmer's market, they have never been in a refrigerator. Therefore, you don't need to refrigerate.
As a farmer, I can tell you that is not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. Because we have a huge walk-in at our farm in Prosser. Because we only deliver 2 days a week.
That's because you're a big farmer, Tom. I'm talking small
farmers. These little farmers market people, they sell a lot of produce. I'm just saying. Carrots might have been in the fridge, but on the farmer's table.
Right.
But you keep them in the fridge. You don't keep carrots on your counter, right? Same with celery. But in the farmer's market, they're going to be out in the open. In the grocery store, they're going to be in the refrigerator.
Yeah, they're going to be refrigerated in the grocery store.
I just think the important part is if you do put your tomato in the fridge, it's going to stop its ripening or slow it down. And then you want to bring it out and let it come back to room temp before.
Do you leave onions on your counter or put them in your fridge?
On my counter, but they always sprout because I never get back to them.
Yeah, me too. Totally.
Well, do you know why you do that? Because it's not refrigerated in the store. It's dry, right?
Right.
Well, it's the same principle.
Yeah, but it's not intended. Those onions have come out of cold storage.
Right, right.
And they're not intended to sit in 75, 85 degree temperature on your counter.
Right.
They're intended to sit in that 50 to 65 degree
area. Right, in your cellar.
And they'll last a long time.
All right, we have someone here from our audience. You okay? You got that?
Okay. You getting that whistling?
All right. Yeah. We have somebody here from our audience who would like to ask you a question.
What is your name, sir?
My name's Joseph Burrell. I'm from Olympia, Washington.
Nice to meet you, Joseph.
Nice to meet you.
I'm a college student looking to start his own kitchen. How many pans and knives and gadgets do I really need? And how much is just over-the-top chefiness that companies try and sell?
So first thing we're going to ask you, when you say start your own kitchen, a commercial kitchen or a home kitchen?
Home kitchen.
Oh, okay. That's different.
And how much do you cook?
I've been cooking dinner most nights, and I'm looking to continue that.
How many pans do you have now?
I'm looking to completely start from scratch.
Okay.
Because I'm at home right now.
Uh-huh. Well, the number one thing you need is a cast iron pan. Go to Goodwill and get a couple of cast iron pans. Very inexpensive. They're going to be used. Put some salt in it. Cook it for about an hour on the stove, medium heat. And then get rid of the salt and then wipe your pan and you'll have a brand new start with a cast iron pan.
Okay.
Chef is taking you down another road than I would, which is just a nice thick bottom saute skillet that is easy to clean and you could, you know, leave it in the sink. Cast iron you have to maintain all the time, right?
Right.
So it doesn't rust. But I would personally say something a little bit more utilitarian. If you look on the back shelf back there, you'll see some stainless steel pans they're by KitchenAid, and they have a thick bottom. And you can, you know, they come in all different sizes. I would just say one or two of those, and then I would get an egg pan, a little Teflon egg pan.
Yeah.
Because they come in handy for all sorts of things. Before you leave today, I would go over there and grab one of each of those knives, the Hot Stove Society knives. I have just gifted you a set of five knives over there from the wall. They're super easy to use.
It's Christmas all over again.
Yeah, they're inexpensive, you know. They're inexpensive, so if one breaks or if they get dull, throw them away and buy another one.
Oh.
I'm not a good knife sharpener, so anyway. But that's, you know, just simple little tools. Don't go overboard. I would say when a recipe that you really want to make calls for a tool, that's the time to go buy it. Don't try and pre-stock your kitchen with things you don't know if you're going to need or not.
And then get a pot. Mm-hmm. A pot that is big enough to boil water, make pasta, you know, think of that kind of behavior. You can always buy a bigger pot and use it for smaller item. And possibly something on the bottom, something like a perforated sheet or something that goes on the bottom so you can steam or you can do all kind of things like that.
Okay.
Perfect. Thanks for the question.
Yeah.
Enjoy question. Picking out your knives.
So fun.
Yeah.
So fun. You never know what's so awesome. You never know what's going to happen if you're an audience member here at
I was looking
Seattle
at your
Kitchen.
Car outside, Tom. Is it for sale?
All right. Your next question, chefs. This comes from Lori Dragseth. She's asking about pickles. She's trying to make them this season, and she wants to know heat or not heat. And brine, and why?
Well, it depends on what you're going to do and how fast of a pickle you want, and depends on what you're pickling and for how long you want to keep it. If you want to keep the pickles for a year or in your cellar...
She's saying refrigerator pickles. Like, she's probably going to...
So that's not, not canned.
Right. Yeah, it's not canned. So you don't need to use heat. You can actually just use warm, pour over your cucumber, make a pickling spice, meaning that you put all kind of spice into a 3-2-1 basic pickling juice, maybe a little bit higher on vinegar for that one because of the flavor, and then put spices in there, coriander, toasted coriander, black pepper, corn,
mustard seeds, cardamom,
maybe a cinnamon stick if you want, and give it some nice depth, a few bay leaf, and then bring that to a boil, let it cool down, and then pour it right over your cucumber or your pickles. And then put that in your refrigerator, and you'll have some wonderful pickling going on for quite some time.
Yum.
And then you have that brine to use for anything else you want, too. That's a flavored brine at that point.
If you're making a nice little potato salad with eggs and hard-boiled egg and everything, you can use that vinegar for a nice little sauce to make, like a tartar sauce kind of idea. It's really delicious.
All right, I got one more from Larissa Zubar. She wants to know about cleanup. Do you guys have any special products that you like to clean your pots and pans?
Yeah, get someone else to do it. That's always a great idea.
I use the green scratchy, you know, like you see from Scott or whatever the brand name is, 3M Scott or Wright. Scott or Scott Bright or something like that.
I use that, and I use also the steel pad. I'm a big fan of, if you buy a, you know, as we were telling Joseph earlier, if you buy a stainless steel pan and you really have seared in there and, you know, there's some strong mark, you take a steel pad in that pan in 1 second. One secret that most cooks don't do at home, when you're done cooking, throw your pan right away when it's hot on the cold water in your sink. It will help unstick all that stuff, you know, from the pan. Then you take a steel pad and you go at it for about 10 seconds. And
under
your pan
cold
is
clean. Water?
Yeah.
I've bubbled pans doing that. Even stainless steel pans.
Well, that depends on... okay, so, yeah, we can get technical and go, if your pan is really, like, super, super, super...
I just wanted to say that I think that's when you have a super hot pan and you put cold water in it, I think... You could risk
some damage. Could risk that if your pan is not actually that great. A good stainless steel pan will not bend.
Okay.
But bottom line is put some water in there so it helps, you know, unstick all that stuff, and just use a steel pad. Steel pad goes a long way with stainless steel. So,
all right, we're going to take. We had so many questions that we're going to keep this going for the next segment, including what to do with all that zucchini in your garden. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right, we're back in the kitchen. That's the Seattle Kitchen from the Hot Stove Society. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And we are continuing with our questions from our listeners. It's super fun to hear that everyone's out there in their gardens and shopping and trying to figure out what to do with all that stuff in their fridge and canning and preserving and all the fun things that happen in the kitchen in the summertime months. Tina, our producer, do you have some more thoughts for us here, some more questions?
I certainly do. Terry Benson has a question about lettuce. Her husband is not a big fan of lettuce, so she wants to make...
Well, let us entertain him then.
If you keep doing that, I'm going to leave. See what I did?
Yeah.
Okay. She says it's hot, and she'd like to make some salad for dinner, but he doesn't like lettuce. So she's wondering if you have any ideas for lettuce-free or minimal lettuce dinner salads. She's suggesting maybe some ramen noodles or something.
I mean, I think people who don't like lettuce is just because they haven't had the right experience. I think you need to start with crunchy lettuce, number one.
All right, I'm going to take over, Chef, because you didn't listen to the question.
He doesn't like lettuce.
I understand.
He said he's an old guy. He's an older dude. He doesn't like lettuce. He's had all kinds of lettuce. So I'm going to start with this. I'm going to take... she didn't say he doesn't like vegetables.
I was trying to convert him.
I'm going to quarter some onions, some sweet onions. I'm going to chunk some broccoli and cauliflower. I'm going to put in some nice threads of carrots, some fennel, all sorts of things. Toss it in a bowl with olive oil, salt. Put it into a hot oven and roast them. And we're going to start with kind of this nice roasted vegetable salad. If you want to use your ramen noodles at that point, make them a small part. But I don't see the need, personally, because you can put potatoes in the same mix and have your vegetable potato roasted vegetable salad. And then just put a nice piece of grilled sockeye salmon. The sockeye is running beautifully right now. Or a piece of grilled steak.
And then you take some crunchy lettuce, you cut it in half, and then you grill it, and then you give it to him.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. See if he eats it.
That's what I would do. A little
just
mustard
hide the
vinaigrette.
Lettuce under the vegetable.
Oh, here's a good one. Beth Ringer Ring is asking, she has a dairy allergy, but she wants to make ice cream. She's wondering if you might have any ideas for making ice cream dairy-free in the summertime.
Man, there's so many recipes right now. It's really a hot category.
Right.
You went to the ice cream shop that Autumn Martin opened called... Frank and Joe's or something like that.
Frankie and Joe's. It is spectacular.
Yeah. So, they're starting, I think, with some cashew milk or hemp milk or somewhere in that area.
We're going to have them on the show, actually. They're going to talk a little bit about how they do it.
So. Perfect, yeah. So I would just go online and try and find something. I'm not capable of telling her a recipe over there.
Well, go to Frankie and Joe and see what the local scene is doing with the non-dairy ice cream.
Oddly, I have, since I've gone plant-based, I've been freezing bananas and other fruits, and you can freeze those just as they are, and put them in your blender and blend them up, and put it back in the freezer for a little bit, and it makes a very pure, delicious fusion.
You know what else does that? Baked apple. You bake an apple in foil with some honey and some nuts, and then you just bake it all the way to a puree, and then you blend it. And that makes a beautiful frozen ice cream texture.
It's more
like a sorbet, but it's definitely a delicious texture. It's extremely unctuous, just like an ice cream is.
I should say I do add a little almond milk or oat milk or hemp milk to that to make it a little creamier. But
I think I read yesterday that even Baskin-Robbins has two new non-dairy ice cream flavors.
That was
flavors
a big news.
You read that right here in our Food for the News. Let's not give it all away.
Okay.
All right, do you guys want to take some time now to talk about zucchini?
Sure.
Okay, we're done. Everybody's asking that all over. And I went to my mother's garden in Tacoma, and she has like 10 giant zucchini, and we just don't.
So, Chef, let's have a little discussion about this, because I think maybe you and I differ a little bit. Squash blossoms, number one, right? They're beautiful.
Yeah.
And they look gorgeous stuffed.
Of course.
And they're usually stuffed with something delicious. But let's face it, they have no flavor.
Well, that's true for a lot of things on this planet. You know, certain things are used. Certain things are used as a vessel.
As a vessel.
And like pasta. You want to use something that has not much flavor in most cases? Mm-hmm. Pasta, just by itself.
Tofu.
Tofu, rice.
Zucchini.
You know, there's a lot of things that have not a lot of depth. Okay. What makes the depth of that is what you put with it.
Right, okay.
So I think you have to look at certain things for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
We're very granted and we have zucchini blossom. And we have a big zucchini that comes after that.
Right.
You know, and the zucchini blossom, I think, are great. You know, stuff them with a little goat cheese mixture and bake them in the oven for about 3-4 minutes and then serve them just like that as a warm little appetizer. I think it's great on a little crostini with that's been, you know, olive oil, salt and pepper. I think it's delicious.
All right, so there's zucchini blossoms. Now we're down to the little zucchini. So you can get them right after they blossom, and they're only about an inch wide and maybe 5 inches long or so.
Yeah, those are a little bit. I don't really use those.
You don't use the like that. That's the
finger
perfect size.
Finger zucchini.
No, not that small.
Oh!
I said an inch wide and about 4 or 5 inches long. But you know, the first zucchini.
Oh yeah, those
blossom,
little baby zucchini,
the tiny little guys. Yeah. You can roast them whole. You can put them on the grill. You can split them. You can shave them into a salad.
The good thing about those zucchini is they have more texture than the big zucchini.
Yeah.
They don't lose their shape as much in terms of they don't lose their water as much because they don't have as much.
They're
smaller. So the meat is actually there's actually more meat per ratio basically. So it's a better thing to use.
When you get to the big zucchini, you pretty much are limited to the shredding and then squeezing some of the excess moisture out, right? And using it in that role, whether in zucchini pancakes, a zucchini bread. I've seen like what they call the compost cookie, and sometimes you see grated.
So you can use it like that, or you can also use it raw, shredded into make long julienne of zucchini into a salad. Or you can, what I do at home often is when I'm going to turn on the grill, it's very rare that I don't do zucchini with it because I'm like, well, I got the zucchini. I might as well do it. It's summertime. So I will do onions, corn, zucchini, and most likely eggplant. Those will be my main vegetable to have to grill while I'm grilling my chicken or whatever because I have the fire. And zucchini, I cut them in half, and I use a little mixture of like smoked paprika, you know, Spanish smoked paprika, and a little bit of sea salt, and put that on top of my zucchini with a little bit of olive oil, very tiny bit, just so they're a little bit moist. And then put those face down on the grill, no flame, just really high heat, and then flip them back on their back a few minutes later. And I don't wait till they're cooked all the way. I just take them out, and then I cover them with a little plastic wrap on top of my in my dish.
So they steam a little
bit. So they finish to cook by themselves with the heat that's in there, and they don't ever become like really mushy. I do not like mushy zucchini. I don't know if that's clear, but I do not like them.
You just sounded like those German soldiers on Hogan's on Hogan's Heroes. Remember those guys? I do not like Sergeant Schultz.
What was the favorite line? But stupid. What was the?
I don't know.
He used to always go incredible, but stupid.
Anyway.
Anyway,
that's
I don't
dating
like
myself right there. Hogan's Heroes. Yeah.
I just don't like I just don't like zucchini cooked all the way, but that's me.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has their own thing. I also love diced zucchini, big cube of zucchini diced to put in my ratatouille because I love ratatouille. Not being, not because I'm French, just because I love ratatouille, right?
I made pasta primavera the other night, and I just couldn't figure out. It just wasn't where I wanted it. So I went to the freezer and got out one of my reduced beef stock cubes. And it melted my beef stock into my vegetable primavera.
You just humped it 100 mile up.
It ended up being too rich. Anyway, next question.
Terry, Debbie Carr wants to know about a poached salmon niçoise. And she said it was light and good, but she would like to make it a little bit better. Any tips on that?
Well, yeah, we should sample that first to have an idea where she stands at with that. Last night, actually, I was doing a kitter out at, in Madison Park, and that was my first course, was a salad niçoise with tuna confit, the albacore tuna from the coast here.
Mm-hmm.
And we confit it very slowly, so the... To me, the trick is just cook it very slowly. Be patient. It's like smoking ribs.
So if you were going to put a thermometer in your oil that you're kind of slow poaching your tuna in...
I would say...
125, 150?
Yeah, 125, 140. You know, somewhere
for
between 125 and 150. For as long as it takes, which is the secret of that. Every piece of fish is a little bit different. You know, the texture, the fibers. Depends if the guy's been swimming for days or if he was relaxing in his lounge chair. So, you know, the meat texture is a little bit different. So you have to actually look at the meat and touch it. What you want to avoid, especially in tuna, is to cook it too fast and too just too fast because it will dry out and it will stay as a piece of muscle that's really tight. So go slow.
And make a delicious dressing.
All right.
Yeah.
And perfectly blanch all your vegetables. No, Tina, we are... Sean's giving me the high sign here. We got to move on. It's time for dinner. We're going to have a dinner party. But it's summertime, and we are banned from anything, any heat source to cook on. So it's going to be a cold dinner party on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Everyone's got a sandwich, so they're not clapping anymore, Terry. I'm Tom Douglas. Thank you for being here today. We're here every Saturday and Sunday. We appreciate you tuning in, whether it's on the radio or... on your podcast or however you get our show. We love hearing from you. Go to Seattle Kitchen and at our Facebook page or something and correspond with us. We like that.
Absolutely. We love to hear from you.
Okay, Chef. So we have been tasked with creating a dinner party without using any heat source.
Sounds delicious to me. I mean, it's so hot outside. Who wants to turn on the stove?
Well, I mean, I like to turn on the grill once in a while. But
we're too.
We're not even allowed to use that.
Oh, no grill.
So, do you want to get us started with a cocktail or you want me to?
I start with a cocktail. I mean,
who are we going to invite to dinner?
Yeah, I mean, who are we going to invite for dinner? I think we should invite Frosty the Snowman.
Middle of summer, he's not going to last long. We'll have a skeleton, a Frosty skeleton.
No, who should we invite?
I would say I would like to have dinner with Ivor Hegland.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because right? I'm feeling like we're down at my beach at Blue Ridge.
Maybe a little boat ride on the canal. And
yeah, I think that's who I'd like to have for dinner, Ivor Hegland.
That's cool.
All right.
But we can cook hot, right? So no clams.
No. Well, we can shuck clams, I guess. But
yeah, I guess you could.
No, anyway. Okay, so cocktails.
I think a nice spritz... two days ago, I had a glass at home. I made that. Never made that before. Kathy bought some Italian soda, lightly lemon flavor in it. So nice spritzy, but not too strong on lemon, but still has a little lemon flavor. And I took some Lillet and put that in on ice and put the soda on top. And it was extremely delicious and refreshing.
Hmm.
I thought, wow, I just invented a cocktail. A little spritzer of lemon with Lillet. Because Lillet is a little bit sweet. You know, it's a vermouth, so it's a little bit sweet on the finish.
Mm-hmm.
But mixing with that soda was absolutely very delicious and refreshing. Mm. So I would say we start with that. So we don't want to start too hot because, remember, it's very hot and we are outside.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to take it easy. Don't go too crazy on the heavy booze or anything. No cocktail like hard liquor or not yet.
Right. I'm going to do a little burrata salad then,
uh-huh.
As long as we're starting there. you know, that burrata, I had one last night that I liked better than the... Typically, burrata to me, it's a little bit too custardy in the middle. I like a little bit more firmness, which is lends itself more towards mozzarella, right?
Right.
So burrata is kind of a mozzarella skin around more
very
of
soft.
A custardy, curdy center. So we're going to do a little burrata, and tomatoes are gorgeous right now. So burrata, several different varieties of wedged tomatoes, and I'm going to make a little vinaigrette out of, I'm going to do some olive chunks.
Uh-huh.
And make a little vinaigrette, basil vinaigrette, out of a little bit of our shallot mustard, some lemon juice, some red wine vinegar, some fresh thyme, and olive oil, and make our vinaigrette. And then, to me, in this particular scenario, you need a fresh baguette. We're not going to be able to toast it, but a nice, chunky, fresh baguette, lots of crust, so that you can, I love to douse my burrata salad and tomato salad, douse it in vinaigrette.
Oh, yeah.
So that you have something to dip into.
Yeah.
Right there.
It's got to be lots of juice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I was going to make a salad niçoise with some canned tuna because we can't use a stove. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to do that since you just made a tomato salad. And I think I'm going to go more in the duck confit shredded kind of idea with a little bit of goat cheese and some shaved fennel salad. Marinate the shaved, take the shaved fennel, put it in a bowl, little salt, little rice vinegar, and let it, and a little bit of olive oil, and let it sit on the counter till it softens down a little bit. And then drain it, you know, pat it down, and then put all your shredded duck meat right on top of your fennel. The goat cheese crumble right on top of that, and then take that juice that's left from the fennel and make a little mustard added to that. Make a nice little thick dressing. And then pour that all over your salad. And then, of course, use... I had some cooked potato that I marinated into that dressing.
I feel like that's cheating just a little bit.
Well, they were cooked. They were in the fridge. I took them out.
I'm assuming
I didn't cook.
The duck was cooked, too.
I didn't cook. The duck was already confit.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, you can buy all this stuff already in... Okay,
the
fine.
The cheese was cooked, too. Don't worry.
Then I'm going to use... something.
No, the cheese was cooked.
I'm going to use something else that was... Not up your alley, but some cooked beets, you know, and then marinate them and put them right around that fennel salad.
Mm-hmm.
That's not up your alley, but I thought that would be a nice little entree kind of salad.
Uh-huh.
And then I would use chips, you know, to put around so you can actually have some kind of bread because you've already used bread, but we can't toast the bread. But I want something crispy with that salad.
I like the idea of chips.
The chips, you know, like some nice tortilla chips. Put them around the duck and the fennel, and then eat that. And while you're eating your salad, so you
Lovely.
Have crunchy, you have soft, you have salty and meaty, and then you have this beautiful, bright fennel salad.
You know what I would like with that is a really the lovely bottle of Beaujolais.
Oh, that would be perfect, actually.
A little Gamay. Right
yeah,
out
nice
there
Gamay. The, yeah. Gamay. It would be sensational.
Lovely, fruity bottle of Beaujolais.
Yeah.
Preferably a single vineyard or a single area, like
a Fleury.
A Bruy or something like that.
Yeah,
Fleury.
Yeah.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Chill it a little bit before you serve it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not too hot. You don't want it to be as hot as it is outside. No, that would be delicious.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, for dessert, I'm getting out the ice cream maker.
Yes.
Since we're allowed to use...
Cold,
are we allowed
but not
to use electricity
hot.
To make ice cream? Tina says yes. She's nodding her head yes.
Okay.
The all powerful Oz.
You know, you don't even need electricity. You could just put the bowl into...
I could do the hand crank, I
yeah,
guess.
You could do the hand crank in the freezer.
Yeah. I'll have you crank while I sip on my rosé.
I'm busy making my duck confit. Thank you very much.
So I'm going to make fresh ice cream, but... you know... The cherries are still out there, and I'm trying to use some before they go away. I got the most beautiful cherries at the Met Market the other day. These massive, you know, I think the tariffs have affected with the cherries that we're seeing here in this country.
Yeah,
usually
it seems
those huge cherries end up in Japan or high end markets in China, where they're willing to pay that for the fruit themselves, like $1 a cherry.
Right.
I bought a 5 pound box of cherries at $5 a pound, and they were by far the biggest, fattest, juiciest cherries I've had in a very long time. Anyway, so I had those. I'm going to chop those and puree those and cook them a little bit to get the moisture out. And then I'm going to use that cherry puree in my ice cream. Sometimes I feel like just a chunk of cherry isn't strong enough.
Right.
Right, so I want to intensify it a little bit. And it's almost like making cherry jam first and then putting it into your ice cream.
Correct.
As you're going. So it also, by doing that, you get some of the iciness away if your fruit is too watery.
So whose cookie are you going to buy to put on top of that?
Whose cookie? Well, Brittany Bartleben is going to be on the show today, so it better be one of her shortbreads. She makes a cocoa nib and bitter orange shortbread dipped in chocolate.
Oh, that would be so good.
That would be really good with our cherry ice cream.
Dang.
Yum. And so that's the cookie that I'm going to use. And we're going to sit on the beach, and we're going to drink a little
Vincento?
Cherry brandy.
Oh, cherry brandy.
Because we're going to get messed up.
Well, because the sun... the sun has...
We haven't been able to use a fire.
How about a cherry? How about a cherry?
Nothing.
How about taking a little bit of your leftover cherry and put them in a glass of grappa? That would be a lot nicer.
Well, Ivor and I, we're going to sip a little cherry brandy over the fire. Now we've got a little roaring fire because we've already cooked dinner.
And it's cold.
And we're going to sit on the beach, and we're going to keep clam.
Oh, where's Mr. Ivor?
Up next, we had our friends here from the Auction of Washington Wines. We're going to talk about that fabulous event coming up on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. It's Chef Tom Douglas.
And Terry Rossiero, the chef in the house.
And a very lively audience. They're like rabid animals waiting for their breakfast.
Yeah, I hope they don't come yet so we can keep the audience alive.
I know. Ever once they get their sandwich, they're like, okay, we've had enough now. I'm Tom Douglas, owner of many Seattle restaurants and food companies, including, I'll probably see it this time of year out there, the Rub With Love line is out there in the marketplace.
Don't forget that Rub With Love. I just used it on my ribs.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm Terry Rossiero.
Also mustards and sauces, barbecue sauces. I got a lot of products out there in the grocery store. Yes,
and
sir.
And I'm Terry Rossiero, the chef in the hat, owner of Luke and Lule in Seattle, Washington.
Well, Chef Terry, we're going to talk for the next 7 minutes or so about the Auction of Washington Wines.
Yeah, I didn't wait for you.
Jamie Piha is here, along with Chris Gorman from Gorman Winery. Jamie, tell us about the Auction of Washington Wines and how does it work and all that sort of thing.
All the fun stuff. Well, the Auction of Washington Wines, believe it or not, is going into its 32nd year, and over 32 years has raised $46 million for Seattle Children's Hospital and for the Washington State University Viticulture and Enology Research.
Nice.
So it's definitely a community event. It involves, obviously, the Washington wine industry and really brings in the industry. They're so supportive and generous of this event. There are a number of different events involved in the Auction of Washington Wines. It's over the course of 3 or 4 days. It's August 15th, 16th, and 17th. And on the 15th, we have picnic, which is really a fabulous gourmet outdoor picnic on the grounds of Chateau St. Michel. We have over 100 wines poured there, and winemakers are walking around on the grounds, walking up to people and pouring wine in their glasses. So it's really personal and interactive. And there's amazing food there. Tom, I know you're going to have a couple of restaurants
there. First
time
in years for me.
Yeah. No, I remember.
Are you saying that the winemaker will walk up to me and pour me a glass of wine?
A winemaker will walk up and pour you a glass of wine.
Awesome.
You know, I wasn't invited, but I think I'm going to show up.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, there are still tickets available, Terry. So, I know somebody.
How do you buy a ticket?
You can just go to auctionofwawines.org and just click on the events button there, and it'll take you right to picnic. And tickets are $150, and it's totally worth it. All inclusive, all the food. There's 13 different chefs there, and again, you know, up to 100 wineries. There are some fun fundraising activities as well. You can win restaurant gift certificates, and we have a really lively barrel auction, which is rather new in the last few years. We have 30 winemakers who are putting up wine futures, which is wine that is not quite released yet. It's typically one-of-a-kind wine, and it's a really fun activity where you can bid to win a case. There are 5 cases from each winery available. You can bid to win a case, and it's really lively. These little wooden blocks go across the board, and as your bid falls off, it falls off. It's very lively and noisy. And then what's left at the time the auction part is over is the top 5 bids that are on the board win a case of this wine. And so it's really fun fundraising activity.
So you don't have to drag home the barrel.
You don't drive home the barrel, but you do get to taste all those barrel samples. So it's super fun. Right. We also have a lot of really one-of-a-kind experiences that you can sign up for that night as well. So it's just really super lively and fun. And there's a lot of industry people there too. So it kind of has that, you know, behind-the-scenes insiders type of feel. So if you're looking for a good time outside, beautiful grounds of Chateau St. Michel, Picnic is the event for you. And that's really, that's on Thursday, August 15th. August 16th, we have winemaker dinners around town in these beautiful homes. And they're really curated events. Most of them have two winemakers involved and a chef from a local restaurant. And so you really have this intimate experience with maybe up to 40 people. I think we're almost sold out on winemaker dinners, so you can still take a look at what they are, and hopefully we can get you in next year. But this year, things are going pretty gangbusters.
And then the grand event.
The grand event is on Saturday, August 17th, and again, it is on the grounds of Chateau St. Michel. It's in a beautiful tent. It's for about 750 people. Mm-hmm. We have about 70 winemakers there. Each winemaker hosts a table of 10, and we have about up to 40 auction lots there, live, one-of-a-kind experiences, trips to different parts of the world. All of them have a wine aspect to them, and that's really where we raise the bulk of the funds for Seattle Children's and Washington State University.
What a good thing this has been over the years. 32 years, huh?
It's crazy, because I was thinking about 32 years. That's when I opened Rovers.
I know. I don't think I had cooked out there in 20-plus years, honestly, at that particular event.
When was the last
time? So it's crazy. Chris is here. Chris Gorman from Gorman Winery.
Hello.
Hello,
gentlemen.
Hello.
Yeah, thank you.
You are one of these treasured winemakers that's helping to raise money for the Children's Hospital.
Absolutely.
And for the oenology program at Washington State. Mm-hmm. Tell us why you get involved.
It's an amazing organization. I mean, Seattle's Children, I've been part of it for the last 18 years, but I think after 32 years, they ran out of people to choose as their honorary vintner, so I was chosen this year. So it's a big honor for me this year mm-hmm. to be on stage, and we're going to be donating a barrel of wine with our live auction lot. Mm-hmm. So it should be
a whole barrel.
That's 25 cases. Somebody gets to take home.
25 cases.
Their own wine.
Yep, and it's a special wine for us because it's going to be the oldest vines on Red Mountain. It's something we've worked with for almost 20 years now. So we're going to donate that, and maybe a potential to double it if we get enough big spenders in there.
So to get a concept of that, what's the bid starting at?
Well, Jamie could probably answer that better than me. I'm hoping it goes like for somewhere 000? Around $25,000,
$30,000. Yeah, we're looking at it going for about $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'd like to see $30,000
a case. Yeah. And we'll kind of sweeten the deal as it goes.
So
I'm
tell
sure.
us a little bit about Red Mountain. I know we're going to concentrate on the auction, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. this wine is from Red Mountain. That area has seen a ton of change, but yeah. you've been making wine there for 20 years, it sounds like.
Yeah, my first fruit ever came from Red Mountain, mm-hmm. and from specifically Kiona Vineyards. And Kiona, who's the honorary grower for the auction of Washington wines this year. So it's a great combination for me.
And it's a flagship area for Washington State wine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely been, Red Mountain has been a...
Yeah, a lot of people compare it to, like, it's our Napa Valley, it's our mm-hmm. structured wines,
right.
it's our very shouldered, tannic, kind of delicious wines, and I've just been a fan of it forever. I mean, I grew up in the wine industry drinking Bob Betz's wines, mm-hmm. and he's kind of my hero in the industry, who was also one of the honorary vintners not too long ago.
Yeah.
So, but fantastic fruit, dense, concentrated. It's what I do. It's basically all the fruit we bring in. All the red grapes come from Red Mountain from us.
Mm-hmm. So. You know, that's just before you get to the Tri-Cities, after our farm in Prosser. You know, so it's about
exactly.
20 miles from
that's
our
right.
farm
yeah.
in Prosser.
Right.
Beautiful area. It's growing so fast over there. The amount of grapes being planted is
that's amazing,
incredible. So if you want to come out to the auction, you're mm-hmm. going to walk around. You're one of those guys walking around pouring
yeah.
wine for me. I'm going to be sweating over a grill.
I'm going to find you.
You're going to yeah. find me. And
give you refreshments.
Yeah. Yeah.
There will be lots of sparkling and rosé there as well, because
yeah.
it is a hot day.
Yeah, I'm actually part of the barrel auction, so I will be kind of stationed at a barrel tasting our 2017 Albatross wine,
okay.
which is not bottled yet. So we'll be bottling that in about a month for whoever, the five winning bids that get it.
Quick side note,
yes, sir.
That wine is delicious.
Thank you.
This
thank
is
you.
The
absolutely.
FOB Cabernet, friends of...
Friends of Gorman.
Fog.
Yeah. Oh, FOG, I'm sorry,
yeah.
FOG Cabernet, old vine from Red Mountain.
Yeah, and this just happens to be all Kiona, and it is what we are donating in a 9-liter version of this at the auction. Mm.
Yeah. Okay, before we go, Jamie, one more time.
Sure.
How do you get tickets?
Auctionofwawines.org. Click on the events button, and you'll find all the information there.
Lovely. Thanks, you guys. It was
yeah.
a pleasure. Thanks
thank
for
you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having
us. Look forward
us.
To seeing you all out there on the grounds of
keep
San
up the good
Michelle.
Work.
All right. We'll see you in a few
for
weeks.
For the picnic. All right. Next up, what's the most iconic meal in every state? I wouldn't have a clue, but Reddit does on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Hey, we're back in the Seattle kitchen. I'm Chef Tom Douglas. Sherry Rotero is busy eating his summer squash breakfast sandwich
it's
from the
delicious.
Dahlia Bakery. I'm glad that you're liking it. I'd like to see your mouthful. You know, Terry, you're going to be on vacation next week, but you were telling me earlier about this fabulous ribs that you have made for the first time, kind of the low and slow American-style barbecue.
My. Oh, my, oh, my.
Oh, my, oh, my.
I really felt like a true American when I did that rib smoking, slow cooking, 4.5 hours. And don't cheat on that. If you're in a hurry, don't even think about it. Because it is absolutely magnificent when it's done properly.
And I was explaining to you my theory, and I'm not the first one to say this, but that grilling is an art. So like when you're grilling a piece of salmon or grilling a lamb chop or a steak, there's a certain artistry to that and the technique and all that sort of thing. But when you're barbecuing and you're letting going low and slow and you're letting the fire do its magic, the smoke work its magic, you have to have faith, like a religious kind of faith, and you can't be opening the lid all
that's
the time,
right,
and you
got
to just sit back, and you know it's going to be 5 hours, and it's hard to wait. That's why I always have a bottle of whiskey when I barbecue.
Well, because I didn't have the whiskey, but I had the rosé.
One of my pleasures in life is sipping on whiskey and smelling the smoke and just thinking about what's happening under that dome of the Weber while I'm making the rest of dinner.
Yeah, I used my egg. So what I did first is I got... two full rack of pork ribs, and I cut them in half. Cause
Which?
Sorry, a short rib.
Which? So, spare ribs or baby backs?
Spare ribs. My bad.
Because baby backs would have been done in an hour, too.
Yeah, they would have been done a lot faster. Mm-hmm. But this has nice amount of meat. It's very luscious, and I just cut it in the middle so they were not too long, because those racks are pretty long. And I used my egg. First, I marinated this meat with... I didn't marinate. I cured it with a little bit of salt and some of Tom's mushroom spice rub and coriander. I had some acho chile, and I had some Peruvian spices, and I brought back from my Peru trip. I figured that would be the great time to use it. And I did something. I had some ground vanilla beans... vanilla in my cupboard, and I said, well, I'm going to use that a little bit of that. Anyway, all that combined and did it overnight in the cellar. I left my ribs in my cellar overnight, and then the next morning at noon,
the health
by
department
midday,
wasn't there, I trust.
No, the health department does not come to my house. It's
okay.
Actually not allowed. Anyway, at noon the next day, I turned on my barbecue, my egg, and put a nice handful of wet apple. I use musket to start the barbecue, and I put a nice handful of apple wood chips, wet, and I put that on top, and then I put my racks on there, face down, meaning then the inside bone first, and then after about, so it was about 180 to 200, it played between those two temperature, and about an hour and 15 minutes into it, I flipped it on the other side. And, you know, there's all that fat that gets rendering. Once you put it the outside side down, then all that fat renders and it stays in that cove there. So after another hour, I took all that fat and really, really brushed it back onto all my ribs to make sure they were not drying out. I just wanted that nice fat to be part of my moisture. And so out of 4.5 hours, I opened the egg only four times. So that's something to remember, as, you know, people get very impatient. They like to see what's going on in there. But I think you have to stay calm and you have to get a bottle of wine or something, because you can't be thinking about your ribs. All you have to do is go back to the kitchen each time and put an hour timer on and then just wait. And when it buzzes, you go, oh, maybe I should just go check my ribs. Don't panic. There is no, at 180 degrees, there is no panic needed. It will cook very, very slowly. When they came out, oh boy, oh boy. I put them into a container, into a big Pyrex pan, and put a piece of aluminum foil and put it in the kitchen. And then I grilled some corn. I had cut some corn on the cob. They were peeled, and I just grilled them on the top of the grill. I did some onions. I do half onions, put them on there and let them do their thing. And then I took a cast iron pan, and I had some little... tiny potatoes. What do you call those potatoes? I just lost the name of it.
Gems? Or
they're like oval.
Oh, fingerlings.
Fingerling. Thank you. Fingerling potatoes that I had blanched and peeled. And I thought that I had. I always have a little container of bacon fat on the side of my stove. So I use that bacon fat, put it into the cast iron pan, put all those potatoes in there, salt, pepper, fresh thyme, and let that thing work on its own. And I made a nice little avocado, tomato, and mozzarella little appetizer. We had the most crumptious dinner. It was just fantastic. Mm. But those ribs, oh my God almighty.
So
they were beautiful.
When you pulled your ribs apart, like one of the things I don't like about some barbecues is that they over smoke or they over cook.
Right.
And so I like my ribs when I pull on the bones, which is how you can check to see if it's done or not.
Correct.
If the bones come free without any meat stuck on them, to me that's overcooked.
Right. That did not happen.
I like a little chew left on
me
my rib.
Me too. We have the same liking. I like that.
So 4.5 hours, 180 to 200, you got to that magic spot where they were done.
They still had give.
Still tender, but but they were still a little bit of chew on
the bone. You could not. It was not the kind of ribs where if I would have pulled on the bones, it would have come out of the meat.
Right.
It was not that far gone.
A lot of times when you see that happen, people have pre-boiled their ribs.
Right.
And then they put them on the grill.
Correct.
Or they bake them in the oven. And that's kind of when that happens.
No, my they still had a nice little chew to it, you know, a little chew to it. It was... Mm-hmm. Oh.
Now,
anyway, I won't talk about it enough because I thought it was delicious. I nailed that sucker. I was so happy. You know, it's easy to overdo it one way or the other and to underdo it. But when you do it right, it's a very pleasurable item because you try to stay calm for 4.5 hours of cooking. And
so when you talked about it, to me, your style that you went with was a little bit more Memphis style.
Correct.
Memphis is slow and slow, but then they do a dry rub after. You kind of did your rub before.
Yeah, I did my rub before. And I didn't
Texas style is just salt and pepper, right?
Right, right.
Kansas City style is smoked with lots of sauce.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. I must say that this was not, you know, I was just trying to do a rub of... Trying to make sense. Oh, I did some grated nutmeg too in my rub because I like that flavor.
What spice didn't you add to your rub?
No, that was it. That was it. I just took a bowl and mixed the whole thing together. But I'm also a big fan of ribs, salt, and pepper. That's definitely one of my favorite way to eat ribs. I love the purity of that, the simplicity, and the flavor that you get out of that. I think is very cool. The rub thing, you have to be very careful about how you rub, and I think it's...
You do, because it can get too smoky.
It gets bitter, it gets aftertaste, you get aftertaste.
Well, the bitterness is where, you know, your rub creates kind of a vehicle to catch smoke.
Right.
On the outside of your ribs, that is more so than what just the plain meat would have been.
Yeah.
And so it can pick up a lot of that smoke and get bitter from the, depending on the kind of wood
and
that you're using.
And also it burns. I mean, you know, the spices are ground, and, you know, they do eventually burn. So you have to be very cautious about how you do your rub and make sure.
The other thing I was going to say in your mix there, if you took your corn and pulled back the husk and just kind of pulled out the silk and put your husk back on, about 2 hours before your ribs were done, you could have added your corn to that mix.
Cool.
And it gets nice and slowly cooked right in its own husk, and it creates a little bit more corny flavor for the corn itself.
Yeah.
That's a little...
That's an
American thing, right?
Compared to
the French don't eat corn on the cob. So I know you've been here a long time, but I'm just saying. But, you know, it's funny that you grow up with that kind of
stuff. I get it. It's good.
Up next, Brittany Bartleben is here. She's the pastry chef for the Dahlia Bakery and the Dahlia Lounge. And we're going to talk about cooking with corn this summer on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society. If you ever want to join us down here for the Baker's Corner or for any other part of our show, just go to hotstovesociety.com. Tickets are $20. And we have a good time. Do we have a good time?
Yeah. Okay.
We have two segments left. And we are joined by Miss Brittany Bartleben, pastry chef from the Dahlia Bakery and the Dahlia Lounge. And I'm hesitant to say it, but I'm going to because Tina wrote it. You are eerily intelligent on corn.
Yes.
Baking with
corn.
That's
pretty good. Yeah. I'm surprised Tina wrote that and not you.
Oh, is that a shot?
A little bit. I figured you have plenty of corn puns for me. There he is.
Looking super husky today. That's nice. Thank you, Tina. Really sweet. It's kind of a corny joke. Let's bake with corn.
Let's bake with corn. Let's do all sorts of things with corn. It's called sweet corn, people.
Yes.
It's
There's a reason.
I don't understand why it's not more used more in dessert. Because if you taste corn, even just the raw stuff, it's as sweet as any summer fruit that's out there right now.
I have never met anyone who does not like cornbread.
Sure, cornbread, yes. I'm talking about
dessert.
Dessert, right. Yeah.
So here's my problem with corn dessert sometimes. People try too hard.
Yes.
Sometimes. So the corn ice creams that I've had, rarely have they come to a point that I said, I'd like to reorder that. I can't wait to come back here for that ice cream again. It's interesting,
yeah.
But is it delicious? Is it unctuous and does it make you want to return? I've not been there with ice cream. Can you make a good corn ice cream?
I think you can.
Okay, so how do you go about something like that?
So one step that I see skipped a lot of the time in recipes that are published out there is cooking the corn in the husk.
With the cobs.
With the cobs first.
Okay.
So I just throw it unshucked in the oven. 25 minutes or so, and it sort of steams the corn, and then you strip it off the cob, and then you take both the kernels that you've stripped off the cob and the cob, and you can then infuse it into your dairy.
To your cream.
And this is what it would be for ice cream, for a custard, for a creme brulee, anything you're making. Mm-hmm. So then I let that infuse for about a half hour, and then I take the cobs out, make my custard, so I temper in eggs, thicken it over the stove, and then I take the whole thing and put it in the blender. So you get little juicy bits of the corn kernel. The reason I pre-cook...
The whole thing without the cobs.
Without the cob, yeah. That cob out of there. That would be weird. But the little bits of kernels, I absolutely love. But if you're not cooking your corn in advance in the oven, there's like this milky, starchy liquid that leaches into your base, and I think it makes a less delicious ice cream base. The other thing I want to mention is just corn ice cream by itself, it's good, it's fine, but it makes you think I want to add butter and salt to this, and just it tastes like spoon bread or corn, you know, creamed corn. I really think you need to pair it with a summer berry because something happens.
Oh, no, that's
there.
That's cheating.
Well, is it cheating or is it enhancing?
Well, is it now raspberry corn ice cream or is it corn raspberry
ice cream? It is corn ice cream topped with fresh.
Yeah.
Oh,
plucked from the vine.
You're not putting it into the cream.
Absolutely not. That is cheating. I'm with you on that.
Very ripe white peach.
White peach. The blackberries that are still warm from the sun. Oh, my mouth is watering just thinking about it. I really think something happens there when you pair a summer fruit with the corn. Mm-hmm. You don't want that butter and salt. I know you're a champion of the corn and blueberry salads. I just had it at Lola the other night, served with the octopus, and it was fantastic. It's such a good combination. Why wouldn't that translate to dessert?
All right. So you don't need to add bacon fat.
Because there's
a lot of weird stuff
there's
going
a lot
on
of
out
weird,
there
I've
in
seen
fancy
it served
restaurants.
With candied bacon.
Yeah.
I think
it's fine, but...
It's fine. It's that's not for me. I want fresh berries.
I'm with you. keep the bacon fat for previously
exactly.
in the meal.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So now we've got corn ice cream.
And a good cookie to go with that.
A dry cookie.
Not something...
What I'm currently doing is rather than doing a corn ice cream over at the Dahlia, I'm doing a corn custard. So I'm making a creme anglaise, which is essentially melted ice cream.
Sure.
What's really cool, you think of a creme anglaise and you think of sort of a somewhat thin sauce.
Right.
What happens with the corn is all the starch, you did cook most of the starch out, but it thickens quite a bit when you puree it. So it's more of this unctuous, creamy pudding. Mm-hmm. And I'm serving that with a really simple honey cake. For me, with a lot of brown butter in that honey. For me, the combination of honey, brown butter, and that sweet corn, and then just a big old pile of fresh Washington blackberries and Crawford Farm blueberries.
Now, for me, I would go a little bit the other direction. I'd make that big pile of blueberries and raspberries, put my big pile of whipped cream on top, and then I would make a polenta cookie, like a little crunch. I love that little crunchy polenta kind of cookie. If you've ever had, it's not Eatsy's. It's what's the cornbread cookie Joan McIsaac makes out there in the marketplace? It's her grandmother's recipe. Anyway, it's like Edie's or Etsy's homemade. Effie's homemade. Good job, Loretta. Effie's homemade. They
I
are
have
the
to have that
delicious
cookie.
Cornmeal cookies. She calls them crackers, which is bull. They are. There's plenty of sugar in those crackers.
Yeah.
They're cookies. And she makes a nice variety. But that is a great little way to use corn in a dessert.
Yeah, yeah. I also, you know, cakes take the addition of sweet corn kernels really well, maybe a cornmeal cake, which is, no, that's not really a stretch of the imagination mm-hmm. for a lot of people. But what I like to do is just add a little bit of masa to those mm-hmm. to those recipes, just to pump up and intensify that corn flavor.
It's got a beautiful perfume.
Beautiful
right?
perfume. Yeah. Yeah. You don't need a lot, just a little bit.
Have you made a dry cookie baked with a corn kernel inside of it?
No. But I should.
Next,
yes. That's a
coming
great
up
next.
At the Dahlia Bakery.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, or you can pop the corn first and put it into the
That's
cookie.
Another one you're starting right. to see is popcorn desserts. You're seeing, you know.
Yeah, but fresh corn, like roasted fresh corn, nicely roasted, and mm-hmm. put kernel into mm-hmm. your cookie before you bake it. That would be
Sign
delicious.
There's a corn, cake yeah. in my book, Big Dinners. It's a rosemary cornmeal cake.
I know
that,
it well.
If you were to shuck that fresh, and I would grill it first. I would put, Ooh. I would caramelize the little grill marks into your fresh corn, shuck it, and then stir that into your cornmeal batter cake. Mm. And then it's got a real rosemary lemon fondant mm-hmm. on top, and that would be a fun
That'd
summer
be delicious.
Dessert.
So I think of that cake as sort of a winter cake, but when you take that tweak to it and serve it with berries, yeah, it's very versatile.
And you get a little
versatile.
Smokiness
yeah.
from the grill.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, tons of ways to use corn.
So many ways. Yeah.
Danish?
Ooh! I've never done a corn Danish. I would probably do a corn pastry cream.
Is that a good ooh that you just did?
No, it was. It was a great ooh.
Oh, okay. That could go either way, you know.
It's corn is one of those things that, like, if I see it on a menu, I'm ordering okay. it. Unfortunately, the dining public is not with me on that. That's why I'm here, to try and be a champion for mm-hmm. corn. But if it were a Danish, I would do a corn pastry cream.
So you do that same kind of
that
custard?
Same that same custardy method.
But instead of just thickening it with the egg yolks, you're going to thicken it with a little bit of flour or tapioca.
Cornstarch, yes.
Cornstarch.
Well, obviously, it should corn be cornstarch, right?
Do,
yeah. yeah.
You could
yeah.
do a corn éclair.
Oh, easily, yes. And in that fact, would... we have done a corn éclair years ago. I mean, it didn't sell. Everybody wanted the traditional, the chocolate vanilla. But the people that did get it loved it. And we just snuck some fresh blackberries
yeah,
into.
You could do, yeah, you could do berry and yeah. corn. That would yeah. be delicious.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hesitant to, I keep going this, you know, cornflakes are a very popular
yes.
thing these days.
Yes.
And you see them in lots of cookies, or you
cookie,
see them
yeah.
as a crust
yeah.
for fried chicken, or lots of things. Mm-hmm. How do we incorporate fresh corn in the cornflakes? Does it have to be in a bowl of cereal?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm not
You're thinking. On the spot now.
I know. I'm going to have to get back to you on
well,
that
you could
one.
Make, you could make a crust for a pie mm-hmm. or for
Well,
for
yeah,
a
like think of a graham cracker crust.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if a corn cornflake crust would be delicious. You know, what's Christina Tosi is sort of a champion of those corn flavors, and she's mm-hmm. someone who's getting a lot of attention for, you know, the corn cookie. So it's we're almost there with getting it popular in dessert. I would love to see it being as popular this time of year as a local strawberry.
You know, Terry and I are big advocates of adding music when we are eating mm-hmm. our food. So we're going to invite the Red Hot Chili Peppers to mm-hmm. sing California,
Californication.
Yeah.
God. I'm going to go Joni Mitchell's California. How about that
California.
One?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. exactly.
So. I'm going to stay at the Hotel California when I'm,
yeah, I like
you
that.
Know, when I'm doing that.
All right. So I think that's all we got for corn.
I mean, I could talk forever.
Tell me one more thing that you've got in
How
the bakery.
How about a nice syrup that you can use and keep in your fridge? And
Yeah, well, the thing is, right now, corn, I mean, it's getting to be as low as like 50 cents
right.
per ear. Stock up.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I would steam it in the husk like that and then hold on to it. And then have corn desserts in the wintertime.
Yeah, you could also freeze it. Yeah,
yeah
that's true.
One thing, I keep hitting that blackberry and corn combination because I think you're noticing a trend here. It's my fave. But we will be having a corn bundt cake with fresh blackberries coming up here in the next
bundt
week.
Cake. Bundt that's
cake.
A good idea.
Yeah, like, you know, like coffee cake, yeah, which yeah. is basically cake, let's mm-hmm. be honest. But yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
All right. That's Chef Brittany Bartolaban from the Baker's Corner. She's the pastry chef at the Dahlia Bakery and the Dahlia Lounge. And we are heading into our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. And are you going to stay with us?
I'd love to.
Really?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
You're even dressed like an ear of corn today.
I am, yeah.
Yes. All right. Looking forward to that on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. And Chef Terry is mightily sick right this second.
No, I'm not. Yes, we are back.
We are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. And Chef Tina is going to administer...
That's definitely not a title I would ever bestow upon myself or anyone else.
You've become a much better cook since you started working on this show.
Actually,
so.
I'm making a bunch of food today.
She actually has stopped cooking.
Yeah. I started cooking, yeah, I have.
All right.
Yes. So, yes, we are playing our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. The way it works is each of you will get five questions. Today, Brittany Bartleben's playing with us, which is super fun. You'll each get five. Whoever gets the most correct is obviously the winner. Whoever gets the least answers correct has to give something away to someone we love who loves our show. Pam Corwin will win whatever the loser wants to give to her today.
Okay.
So you have to pony something up is the short story there. Chef Thierry, what will you give up should you lose today?
Well, it's time to come downtown and have lunch. So I'm going to give lunch for two at Lule.
Nice.
Monday through Friday, we serve lunch. So lunch for two at Lule.
Carve out a lot of time. It's a delicious lunch over there.
Yeah. We just have to change the menu, so it's nice and fresh and beautiful. And
lovely. Brittany Bartleben, what would you like to give away?
I'm going to do a $100 gift card to the Dahlia Bakery.
Whoa.
And summer fruit is pouring in, and the menu's changing a lot, so it'll give you a lot of opportunities to come back and try new things.
Delightful.
Mm.
Tom, what do you think?
Mm. I'm going to be having a mixed berry pie right now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So I'm going to give away two tickets to our Julia Child birthday celebration, which somebody's going to get me the actual date. I want to say it's the 16th of August. I believe it'll be her 105th, 104th?
Yeah, 105. Yeah,
105th birthday or so, maybe even more. That's a lot of birthdays. and so we have a little walk around here. They're $50 tickets, so that's $100 value. Two tickets to the Julia Child birthday party here at the Hot Stove Society.
Hmm. Those are super fun prizes.
We got to make sure that Tom loses today.
No problem.
Oh, that was a throwdown.
Every time I trash talk, I lose, too.
Fight words coming from Chef Bartleben.
All right. I stopped, you know.
Chef Thierry, your first question. What spice gives American-styled mustard its yellow color?
Turmeric.
Turmeric's the
Why did they put turmeric in mustard? What the heck is
to
that
To give
about?
It the yellow color.
Oh, my God.
All right, question number two. Listen up, because the audience knows some of these, and they're here to help.
Saffron.
Which grain is grown in higher quantity worldwide, rice or wheat?
Yeah, wheat.
Oh,
it's rice.
It is rice.
Okay. Well, that was a choice. I had a choice between the two.
You had a choice. You had 50-50.
Rice was too obvious.
Right. Question number three. What is the name of the high-heat brick and clay oven traditionally used in Indian cooking? You guys, quiet down.
I do know that. Tandoori.
Correct. All right. Two wrong, one right. Question number four.
Story of my life.
Which is larger, a bushel or a peck?
I'm going to go with a bushel.
Correct.
What's a bushel and a peck?
It's a bushel.
And a hug around your neck.
I remember that.
And a barrel and a squeeze.
Anybody else on that? You want, everybody now want to sing that?
It's a Tom.
No, let's just let Tom do it.
Okay.
What show's it from? South Pacific.
There we are. Okay, you guys. Chef Thierry, your last question. True or false, adding baking soda to the cooking water of green vegetables will prevent their vitamin C from leaching into the water?
False.
You are correct. Baking destroys the vitamin C present in vegetables. So you
really?
Have
so all those roasted veggies I have are vitaminless.
Yep.
Ooh. That guy better eat his leafy vegetables, leafy greens.
All right, Chef, that was three correct. That was more correct than incorrect. That's a valiant showing.
That is good.
You are very positive this morning.
I see the donut, not the hole, people. All right, Chef Brittany, your first question. What kind of farming involves moisture conservation that produces intensely flavored crops celebrated by foodies?
Hydroponic?
Yeah.
It's actually dry farming.
Oh, I've never heard
Wine,
of that.
Wine, grapes, so. Olives, tomatoes, stuff like that. Tom, you got anything on dry farming?
Too.
I have no dry farming. Without irrigation at my farm, we are dust.
Toast.
Yeah.
Toast.
Doesn't happen out here. All right, question number two. What ingredient is needed into flour to make the thickening agent called beurre-manier?
Beurre-manier.
Butter?
Yeah.
Nice guess.
Correct.
Okay.
figured you might know that one. All right, question number three for you, Miss Brittany. In what southern hemisphere country is the kiwi fruit mainly cultivated?
You say...
It's not New York.
It's not New York. Southern hemisphere.
Somewhere kiwi fruit.
Kiwi. Oh.
It's not New Hampshire.
It's not New... It's New Zealand is what it is.
It is New Zealand.
Yes.
Tom was trying to throw you off.
Very good.
That's not fair.
I was trying to help you.
He started by new, which is... That was his hint.
All right, you are doing very well.
Thank
Two
you.
Correct, one incorrect. Okay. Question number four for you. What type of milk has the most fat, cow, goat, or sheep? The most fat.
I don't know. Let's say cow.
It's actually sheep.
Yep.
Oddly, sheep. Your last question to tie with Chef Thierry. Mm-hmm. What is the name of the cone-shaped sieve?
With chinois?
Yes.
Or China cap?
No,
yeah.
Chinois.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yes to all that. Of it.
Without all even right. without even finishing the question, it's a tie. Tom, yep. Three's the number to beat for you.
All right.
Are you ready?
That'll be determined soon.
Chef Tom Douglas, in making pie crust, which fat requires more temperature control to assure flakiness, shortening, or butter?
Butter.
Okay, that wasn't as hard as I thought it might be. That's why I was talking like that. Which government agency regulates what additives can be put in packaged foods?
The FDA.
Correct. Alrighty. What is the British term for potato chips?
Crisp.
Wow, yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
True or false, chilling onions for an hour in ice water before they are cut makes them less likely to cause tears.
Absolutely true.
True. Yes. All right. You have to get this one correct to win. What is the literal translation of the term al dente?
Toothy.
Correct. You're the winner again.
Yay! That means we have a tie for the losers. Should we do a slap down or do you
slap off? Yeah.
Okay. Slap off. Here we go.
Which fish is lower in fat, coho salmon or king salmon?
Coho.
Correct.
Ooh. Miss Bartleben. Mm-hmm. Is donating a $100 gift card to the Dahlia Bakery. Enjoy all the fruits of the season. Thank you for playing, and congratulations to the Pam Corwin. If you want to be the part of the show, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for Seattle Kitchen. Our show is produced by the folks at Large Media. That's L-A-R-J Media. Our sound engineer is Sean, the handsome Del Torre. Don't call me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com. And buy a ticket for only $20. It comes with breakfast and hot coffee. Remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can listen to wherever you get your podcast, Stitcher or iTunes, or download the Cairo Radio app and listen to us there.
Thank you for listening.